Jonathan Keeble and Toby Longworth. Taking a deep breath to ease the tension that tightened his chest, Zahariel peered down into the opening. He pushed back memories of the last time he had been here, beneath the Northwilds arcology, and of the terrible things that he had witnessed. He was not sure if it was the emptiness of this primitive new settlement, or some reflection from a deeper, less physical sense that caused him to balk at the threshold. He turned to his companion and gestured towards the rocks surrounding them, carved by drill and laser pick.
Someone dug this recently.
Like Zahariel, the other space marine was unarmed, dressed instead in the heavy robes of the Order. He bore no symbols of rank or title. He was an enigma, the Lord Cipher, and guardian of their secretive traditions. He glanced around and shrugged.
Scavengers?
After so many years, why would they run from us? Flight suggests guilt.
Cipher turned back. It was not the first reluctance that he had shown since Zahariel had joined him.
The Order raised this place. It is natural that the inhabitants might think they are breaking our laws simply by returning. There is nothing of importance here.
I think it bears further investigation. It was you, after all, who wanted to come to the North Wilds. I am only here as an interested party.
It was Luther that had ordered Zahariel to accompany the Lord Cipher in his many secretive comings and goings of late, though Cipher himself had been hesitant to oblige. This was merely the first chance that had presented itself for them to travel together.
I do not wish to return to the Grand Master without a full report.
What is there to report?
He waved an arm to encompass the deserted settlement behind them.
Some vagrants have raised their slum here, that is all.
We have seen only the surface. We should look a little deeper, if only to assure ourselves that there is not another rebellion growing in these decayed tunnels.
Lord Cipher looked uncomfortable.
Did Master Luther share the circumstance that prompted his sudden interest in this region?
Zahariel did not have to lie.
Briefly, the number of recruits raised has almost outstripped the facilities at Alderuk. He is thinking of raising a new fortress here.
An odd choice, considering its history.
I disagree. It is the most obvious choice. A sign that the Order has returned to mark the lands with its presence.
They passed down tunnels that had once been gleaming metal, now marked by stains and corrosion. The air turned acrid, tainted by some unidentified source. Zahariel paused for a moment, one hand to the side of his head. He felt something stirring beneath them, something that he had not felt for a long time, but familiar all the same. After a few seconds, he plunged into the darkness once more, the lamps of his armor springing into life. They followed the tunnel for some distance, encountering more signs of recent excavation and construction, where toppled walls had been dug away and bulkheads erected to improve the structure. As they descended, the air grew hotter, becoming almost stifling. The stench grew with it, though there seemed no cause for the reek. The passageways and chambers that they passed were free of filth and spoil. Lord Cipher made no remark on this fact, though he continually glanced back at Zahariel. With the heat and stench also came an oppressive sensation. Zahariel could not shake the feeling that each step was taking him closer to a ghastly fate indeed. The feeling grew the further they delved, though Cipher seemed unaffected. Or perhaps, a suspicious part of Zahariel realized, forewarned.
Wait!
Zahariel's warning caused the Lord Cipher to stop in his tracks, hand moving to the bolt pistol at his belt. A moment later, a long, low breath resonated up the tunnel, issuing from a distance, the rank air stirring with hot breeze every few seconds.
Do you feel it?
An unnatural dread began to seep through Zahariel's body, a chill spreading up his spine. Zahariel extended his will, motes of psychic energy dancing in the pupils of his eyes. and he reached out a hand, fingers splayed as though probing an invisible wall. Cypher drew his weapon. It was better not to speak of what had happened before, so the librarian lied.
An after echo, nothing more. You look uncomfortable. What is wrong?
I cannot go. I must...
The Lord Cypher shook uncontrollably, eyes darting to the left and right, seeking the doom that was coming for him. He started to retreat up the corridor.
We have to go back. This was a mistake.
Ghosts of the past.
Zahariel's words were as much for his own benefit as his companion's. He had never seen another legionary act in such a manner. But then Cypher had not faced the terrible thing in the depths of the North Wilds as Zahariel had.
There is nothing here to be afraid of. Just memories.
Shuddering, Cypher staggered away. Zahariel did not go after him, the dull thud of his boots fading back up the tunnel. Zahariel had grave misgivings. His memories crowded with visions of voracious worms and something terrible and unnatural. But he pushed on. Luther had sent him here, and the Lord Cypher had been drawn to this place too. Zahariel did not need his psychic sense to feel the waves of strangeness emanating from the passages ahead. There was familiarity here. A voice. A presence to which Zahariel was no stranger. The foulness around him did not feel like a warning, though Lord Cypher had taken it as such, but more like a welcome. But why now? Had the settlers unearthed something that had been missed by the Purge? It seemed unlikely that they would have remained, had that horrific, pervading aura been noticed when they chose this place. Was it really the two Space Marines that had caused them to depart their homes with such haste? Why had Lord Cypher come here? Too many questions without answers. Cypher. He had to have known what was happening here. Perhaps he had been warned that Zahariel was watching him and lured the librarian to this place. Zahariel's superhuman hearing picked up the sharp echo of their shuttlecraft's engines firing. Zahariel broke into a run, heading back towards the surface. Something was coming. He could feel it now, like fetid breath on the back of his neck. The others had to be told. He had to raise the alarm. The Ouroboros was returning.
Wolf's Claw by Chris Raitt. Performed by Toby Longworth. Directed by Christian Dunn. His enemy wore the scaled blue-green livery of the traitors. He was massive. A heavy treading monster in tactical dreadnought plate, with twin chain blades slung under combi-bolted fists. Already three wolves of Fenris lay at his feet, bleeding and broken. Bjorn crouched low, hugging the wall of the corridor. Ship combat was a close, claustrophobic thing, a matter of thick shadows and tight spaces. Only four remained of the pack he had brought with him onto the Alpha Legion frigate Iota Malafilos. There was nowhere to fall back to, no cover to use. Three more traitor legionaries advanced in the shadow of the Terminator champion, crunching over the bodies of the fallen as they came. Bjorn tensed, readying for the countercharge. He felt the hunt spirits of his surviving brothers prepare for the same. And just then, just as his muscles flooded with hyperadrenaline and his heart thudded with kill urge, he remembered how it had been before. He remembered going to Sliek for the tools of war he needed and what answer he had been given. What would the Blade Maker say, Bjorn wondered, now that the tide of murder had risen again? What curses would spit from those burned and blunted fangs once he realized what had been done? Down in the depths of the Hrafnical's forge level, the fires never went out. Calderas of molten iron poured ceaselessly, flaring as the liquid metal hissed into the formers. Hammers rose and fell against adamantium anvils, and the whine of the conveyors was broken only by the steel-thin benediction of crimson-robed tech priests. Bjorn pushed his way through the toiling masses, heading with singular purpose towards his target. The flagship's forge master, glowering in a near-black array of scored and ancient battle plate, was waiting for him before the open maw of a glowing furnace.
I wondered how long it would be.
The priest of iron spoke from behind a slope-grilled death mask. Bjorn hailed him.
I seek the one they call Blade Maker.
We're all called that down here. But you found the one you're after, and he already knows what you want.
Bjorn looked up at Sleak Blade Maker's towering servo arms, slick with oils and bearing the chip marks of recent work.
I need a gauntlet.
Sleak laughed, his voice as dry as brazier coal.
The Wolf King likes you. Sent you down himself, I was told.
He drew closer, and Bjorn smelled his acrid smoke stench.
It won't do you any good. You could be Lord Gunn himself, and you'd still have to wait in line.
Bjorn raised his left arm. It terminated in a tangle of scorched and broken metal spars. Since losing his hand on Prospero, there had been no opportunity to forge an augmetic replacement, and his last combat against the Alpha Legion had mangled what remained. He turned the stump in the light of the fires.
I can't fight like this. Not again.
I heard you'd been doing fine.
I need to grasp a blade again.
For a second time, the forge master laughed.
More than one.
This was my sword arm.
Best learn to use the other, then.
Bjorn squared up to Sleak. Don't jest with me, Hammerer.
You think I jest? Look around you. I have 4,000 warriors to clad in armor. Every hour that passes brings me another bloody tally of cracked armor and broken blades. I have worked my thralls to death to meet the thirst for iron, and it will not cease while the snakes have us by the throat. You have your sight, your strength, and you can carry a boulder. That makes you one of the lucky ones.
It is not enough. I need a gauntlet.
Sleak stooped, lowering his blackened helm until it was a hand's breadth from Bjorn.
Get in line.
For a moment, Bjorn didn't move. He flexed the fingers of his right hand, considering forcing the issue. It was a possibility. Sleak was big, but Bjorn had taken on bigger. But then, grudgingly, he backed down. Brawling with his own kind would only accelerate their likely doom amid the rust-red stars of Alaxis.
I will return. You will not refuse me again.
Sleak merely shrugged and returned to his work. His servo arms whirled into action and the fires blazed anew. Bjorn strode on past rows of laboring thralls, barely noticing the flicker of arc welders against their heavy masks. His every nerve burned with fury. He would have to enter combat again as a half-breed, a liability, a cripple. His own death held no fear for him, but the thought of failing his pack brothers soured his blood. Then, in the final reaches of the forge chamber, he saw it. It hung on adamantium chains, half lost in the darkness, glinting sharply from the reflected light of the furnaces. It was complete, pristine, and savagely beautiful. Bjorn picked out a mortal thrall.
You, who was this made for?
The thrall bowed clumsily in his thick forge armor.
I know not, Lord. Shall I beg knowledge of my masters?
Bjorn looked at it again. The alloy was flawless. This was a singular thing, the work of an artisan genius. The bearer of this would slay and slay until the stars burned out and darkness howled across an empty void. Bjorn extended his withered arm. Can you fit it?
Yes, but...
Do it.
He reached for the hanging chains. His pulse was already quickening.
Do it. Now.
Roaring death curses from the old ice, Bjorn leapt out at the enemy. His four adamantium talons snarled into energy-shrouded light, harsh blue against the gloom around him. The Terminator champion came at him hard, chain blades juddering in the bloody shriek. The two warriors crashed together, and Bjorn felt the raking pain of adamantium teeth cutting into his pauldron. He took a bolt round, close to the chest, nearly hurling him onto his back. He veered, swerved, and thrust, twisting to keep his foe close. He thrust his wolf claw upwards, catching the legionary beneath the helm. Lesser talons would have cracked and splayed, breaking on the reinforced gorget collar and opening Bjorn up to the killing blow. But these talons bit true. Their disruptor shroud blazed in a riot of blue-white, tearing into the thick ceramite. The claws pushed deeper, slicking through flesh and carving up sinew, muscle, and bone. Hot blood fountained along the adamantium claw lengths, fizzing as it boiled away on the edges. The champion staggered, pinned at the neck. Bjorn twisted the blade, and the enemy fell, his throat torn out, thudding to the deck with the heavy final crash of dead battle players. Bjorn howled his triumph, flinging his claws wide and spraying blood flecks across the corridor. In his wake came his brothers, firing freely, locking down the surviving Alpha Legionnaires and driving them back. Godsmote, Bjorn's second, chuckled as he ran past, glorifying at the deed.
One-handed no more. We shall have to find you a better name.
Bjorn paid no attention. He was restored, ready to rip and tear and pierce, crippled no longer by fate and the whims of war. Blademaker could curse all he liked. He would not be getting these claws back. Bjorn roared.
Slay them! Slay them all!
And, with a grind of battle plate and the crackle of disruptor energies, he strode out, whole once more, into the shadows.
Dark Compliance by John French. Performed by Gareth Armstrong, Cliff Chapman, Steve Conlin, Matthew Hunt, Jonathan Keeble, Penelope Rawlins, Melvin Rawlinson, and Ramon Tikara.
Hail, Desigus, Lord of the Gilded Worlds and Warden of the Aventian Gulf.
Who are you that comes to us out of the night?
I am named Argonis, and I speak in the name of Horus, Warmaster of mankind.
Why do you come here, emissary?
I come for your fealty.
Fealty? Truly you call it that.
What other word would you give it?
Treachery. That is what I call it, and that is what it is.
You are a brave man.
And you are.
You fought Untalisan, and were in the Halo margins from the beginning to the end. You led the conquest of a star cluster, and cast down the idols of Messana. This system is yours to command because you bled for the right.
Your lips turn such flattery into poison.
Flattery? No. Honesty. I know you, Desigus, though this is the first time we have met. I know your strengths and your weaknesses. I know that you only let my ship through your defenses and me into your presence, so that you could look me in the eye and call me traitor. I know that you intend to carry your defiance back to the War Master, with tongue to speak it, but without eyes to see or hands to grasp a weapon. All this, I know.
Then what is about to happen will not be a surprise.
And I know that you are a man who never makes a choice lightly.
I have made my choice. I stand against you. Your promises are false gold.
Promises? I have made no promise, but I will now. Bend your knee. Speak the words of loyalty to your War Master. Give him all that is yours to command, and you will live.
Live? That is your promise?
No. My promise is that if you do not, then this system will not last a single orbit of its star.
That is...
It is what will happen if I leave here with anything other than your oath of compliance.
No. Even he would not. The resources, the people...
Would he not? Could he not?
The cost in blood, in lives.
It can be done. And it will be done. All your realms, all your warriors, all the billions who you protect, all will be ashes. And you have the power to save them.
You lie.
I like you, Desigus. So I will give you a gift. One warrior to another.
I spit on your gift.
The gift is this. I will give you understanding so that you can make your choice knowing what you have chosen. Have you heard of Akazar Beta?
Why?
Because its story is one I would tell you.
The emissary stared at Cadith, eyes hard in a blunt face. The sea green of the emissary's armor was almost black in the forge light. The banner in his hand was a sheet of woven iron thread. A golden eye stared from its center, and a row of rubies hung at its hem. Behind the emissary, 30 warriors stood in loose ranks, weapons held low, but ready.
What is your answer?
Cadith heard the question. Tonal sifters mounted on his audio sensors parsed the words and projected percentages of arrogance and confidence at the edge of Cadith's sight. There was no fear in the emissary's voice, of course. That was the problem with the Legionis Astartes. They were not pure enough to be machines, but like machines, they had shed many of humanity's imperfections. Had they gone the whole way and shed the rest of their weaknesses, the Imperium would not be at war with itself. Of course, that probably would have made them less effective, and effective they undoubtedly were.
Myrmidax Cadith, I will grant you a final opportunity. What is your answer?
Cadith nodded slowly, and his halo of weapon mechadendrites rippled softly. He glanced from the emissary to where molten metal fell in from apertures in the temple roof. Iron columns rose from the floor amongst the glowing cascades. A figure stood atop each column, the height indicating the rank of the Magos who stood on them. Some wore robes, others were hunched figures of plasteel and brass. Automatons stood guard at the base of each column, their armor glazed red by the furnace light. Information buzzed in the air. Had Cadith not shunted his entire noosphere interface into a dead part of his consciousness, the data flow would have been overwhelming. It was irrelevant, though. No new data, theory, or analysis could change the outcome of this audience.
My answer as construct representative of Akazar Beta, domain of the Omnisire, is this.
He watched a small muscle twitch next to the emissary's eye. The buzz of data transfer had silenced across the chamber. One by one, the machines and lesser initiates went silent.
all would hear what Cadith said next.
Kill protocol.
The automata exploded into motion. Bolt rounds hammered from the legionary's guns. The smallest automata were a blur of pistons and armor plates. Explosions burst across them. Cadith watched as a pair of scout-class automata ran on even as their carapaces became shreds of plasteel. He could feel the emissary's vox signal trying to break free of the temple. Siege automata stamped forward from the shadows. One by one, they locked into place. The weapons on their shoulders rose up and unfolded like the heads of chromed flowers. Cadith heard the whine as the weapons built charge.
We are betrayed!
The emissary was shouting into his vox now. The siege automata fired as one. Spheres of plasma thudded through the air and splashed down amongst the ring of warriors. Other automata were still charging forwards, heedless of the fire they ran into. A ragged wave of shots rose from the few warriors who had survived the plasma storm. Energized blades snapped out from the automata's forearms as they struck. The silence was total and sudden.
Warden protocol.
The automata clanked into a perfect circle around the still cooling remains of Horus's emissary. Cadith stepped off his pillar, and the thrusters built into his frame caught his descent. He floated down, crimson and white robes billowing around him. When he touched the floor, he could still sense the heat from the plasma. He looked down at the heap of armor and flesh at his feet, and then looked up at the eyes of the Magi on their pillars.
Make the final preparations. Horus will be coming.
He saw something amongst the blackened slurry and pulled it free with a claw of a mechadendrite. A scrap of a banner, woven with gold, hung from a metal tentacle.
He has no choice now.
The throne room was almost silent as Maloghurst approached his master. The banners and trophies hanging from the high ceiling shifted with the vibration of the vengeful spirit as it slid through the void. The War Master sat on his throne, his hand resting on the pommel of Worldbreaker, his eyes fixed on a distance only he could see. He had sat like that for the past 2.5 hours, thoughts wrapped in silence. Maloghurst limped to the foot of the throne, his cane tapping on the floor. Horus gave no sign of having sensed his adjutant's presence. He had, of course. Nothing escaped the War Master's notice, and none of his actions were without purpose. Maloghurst had learned both truths many times over.
Lord?
Maloghurst bowed his head and waited for a response. None came.
There is no word from your emissary to Myrmidax Cadith and Akazar Beta. It has been 10 hours now.
Horus's eyes shifted from one point of the starfield to another, but his face remained as though carved from stone.
My master, what is your will? Should the fleet begin bombardment of the outer system defenses, there is the possibility that other factions on Akazar Beta may be turned to our cause if approached. They might even deal with the Myrmidax Cadith and his allies themselves, if motivated.
In the earliest days of the Crusade, the 17th Legion would send heralds to speak to those who would not accept my father's truth. They would go clad in black and with a skull as a mask.
They were infected with foolishness even then.
Yes, but they had a point too. Do you not think, Mal?
That a herald ill-received was likely to die.
Yes, perhaps. But they have always had a flair for symbolism. They realized what their heralds truly were and what they carried in their wake.
The hypocrisy of the imperial truth, if memory serves.
Death, Mal. Death followed them whether the herald lived or died. Sometimes you need victory.
And sometimes you need a symbol.
Horus raised his left hand. The blades of his fingers glinted as he stared at them.
Find Argonis.
My lord, I must caution against that. He is a wayward creature. He has atoned for his failures, but can a broken sword ever be made truly whole?
I know you do not like him, Mal, but he is a rare creature amongst warriors. His blood runs with ruthlessness and defiance, but he also wishes to be accepted, honored even. I have need of those qualities.
As you will it, my lord.
And bring all the fleet to full battle readiness.
You have decided then. Nakazar Beta dies.
No.
Horus let his hand fall and shook his head, slowly.
No. It will live forever.
Reaver Wing launched and running free.
Scytheclaw launched and running free. Lupus Wing launched and running free.
Galdron's strike fighter dropped into the void on the dark side of one of Akazar Beta's moons. Behind it, wings of gunships and bombers slid from the launch bays of the two cruisers which had carried them to the launch point.
All squadrons come into spear formation on my mark. Mark.
His fighter flicked around, and he felt the tug of G-force pull his flesh. He blinked, and a view from the tail of his Inceptor filled his helmet display. He could see thrusters flare as the 108 warcraft of his group pulled into a narrow arrowhead.
Looks very pretty, does it not? Like a poem of blood written in the night.
Get off this channel, Skarix!
You have no soul for this kind of murder, Cthulian.
There is no such thing as a soul, you nostrum and gutter discharge.
Is that all the teeth the one-time lunar wolves now have?
Galdron ignored the question and cut the link. His eyes flicked to where a squadron of midnight-winged craft coasted at the edge of the group. Lightning bolts of inlaid silver crawled over their wings. He fancied for a second he could see the kill markings dotting their flanks.
They sent jackals to run with wolves.
His lip curled, and he blinked the rear view away. The moon was growing large in front of him. Its surface was a black disk, edged by a thin crescent of red. Behind him, the fast cruisers flipped over and began their burn back to the system's edge.
Approaching drift belt. Cut engines. Directional control only. Sensor baffles to maximum.
Galdron cut his main engines. Inside his helm, runes blipped between colors as his strike fighter became nigh invisible. Proximity warnings chimed in the quiet of his helm as the asteroid drift swallowed his strike fighter. A vast chunk of gray rock and ice spun past him. He let his mind fall into a slow pattern of anticipation and action. Hours of this dance lay ahead. Argonis waited, head bowed as the doors of the throne room sealed. Behind him, he was aware of the lingering presence of Malloghurst standing in the shadows. Around him, the emptiness echoed. Only minutes before, it had been filled with captains, shipmasters, and commanders of every part of the Warmaster's forces. Now, it was as though they had never been.
You are wondering why I summoned you, Argonis.
Horus turned from a viewport, through which he had been watching the blackness and stars beyond. The starlight was weak, and gave more shadows to his face than illumination. The beast pelt draped across his shoulders seemed marked by frost, and the gold and black of his armor was a sketch in the gloom. The Warmaster's right hand seemed to be holding something small, and so black that the light did not touch it. He reached out and dropped the small dark shape onto the top of a pillar set before the viewport. It looked like a red pearl. Whatever it was, It hit the black iron of a pillar's top with a deep note that hung in the air. Argonis tasted blood on his lips, and for a moment he wanted to shout for rage at the turn of fate which had led him to where he was standing and what he was. Then his eyes moved from the red pearl, and both feeling and taste vanished. Horus was looking at him, eyes dark and unblinking.
Great events are only great because they are witnessed. And today, Argonis, I have chosen you as my witness.
By your will, my lord.
So meek? I remember you with more fire in your spit, Argonis. Or did your penance rob you of that quality?
I will never fail you again, lord.
No, you will not.
The shadows seemed to crawl across Horus's face for an instant. Argonis felt his muscles and gut tense, as though for a blow.
But you served me well at Talarn, and you will do so again on other worlds, all the way from here to the Gates of Terra.
You honor me, lord.
Honor? No. I do not honor you, Argonis. I use you. You are a weapon, and a valuable one. But a weapon nonetheless. And weapons are only as useful as what they can help destroy.
Argonis remained silent. The light of warships came into view beyond the viewport. Farther out, dozens of other vessels were already burning hard to reach their positions.
You have questions as to this campaign. I could see them on your face during the war council.
I know your orders. I have nothing that requires an answer, my lord.
But you still would like answers, would you not? Questions are like that. They make one unsatisfied until they are replaced by fact. Come, ask what you will.
Why did you send an emissary to Akasar Beta? The scout and intelligence reports were already clear that Myrmidax Kadith and his magi would not comply. Why make the demand of fealty at all?
Because I needed a reason for ships to enter the system and then seem to leave. Because I had to give Myrmidax Kadith something to focus on while other wheels turned around him.
The emissary was never going to succeed or survive.
As I said, Argonis, weapons are only as useful as what they can help destroy.
Horus smiled for the first time. Argonis felt ice run down his spine. The War Master placed his hand on Argonis's shoulder and gestured to the dark before the throne. Cones of hololithic light unfolded in the air. Maps of a star system, battle pict feeds, and tactical projections spun into being in front of Argonis's eyes.
Come, my son. Watch and listen.
Myrmidax Kadith sat alone in the Forge Temple. Not that he was ever truly alone. A web of Nuspheric data connected him to each of the other Lords Magos who were scattered across the planet's surface, and through them to every machine and subsystem controlled by them. He also maintained Vox and data links to the seneschals of each of the three Night Houses who came under his control. Through this lattice of interface, he commanded rings of defense platforms and system defense craft spread between Akasar Beta and its three moons. On the surface, hundreds of knights, thousands of automata, and millions of Skitari moved to his will. To another being, it might have seemed as though he wielded the power of a god. But Kadith had been born on Mars and seen the true majesty of what knowledge and machine could encompass. He was still just a component, no matter how high he sat in the hierarchy of the Mechanicum, and his function in the situation that faced him was as a creator of destruction.
Ships detected approaching from system edge.
Confirm formation strength.
Estimate from full data spectrum, 67 battle configured vessels.
Recalculate and compare against previous long-range sensor information and marginal strength estimates.
80.25% probability that approaching enemy force are not complete enemy strength. Truth is the machine. The machine is truth.
Cadiff contemplated the calculation. The orbital defenses were already prepared. The system ships held close to the planet to counter Horus's forces if they broke through. The balance of probability was that the assault would fail. Akazar Beta was not a forge world, but for the purposes of facing down an invader, it was perhaps an even harder prospect for conquest. It was a Mechanicum staging world, a grand warehouse for material destined for other parts of the Imperium. It had more military resource than most star clusters, and its defenses were enough to turn back a crusade fleet. With it readied for battle, Cadiff had the statistical advantage. He just needed to ensure that he missed no relevant factors.
All surface units, potential enemy planet fall within 205 minutes. Probability margin 29.75%.
What do you see?
Argonis stood at the center of the shifting hololiths. Voices came out of the dark at him. Snatches of vox chatter, orders from ship captain to ordnance officers, the muttered oaths of legion warriors as they waited in the bellies of gunships. In front of him, he saw Akazar Beta and its moons flicker at the heart of the hollow projections. Beside it was the pict feed from the nose of a dropship as it slid from a launch bay into the void. It changed even as he focused on it, skipping to the view within a gunnery chamber, then to a magnified view of one of the planet's moons.
I see. I'm not sure.
Yes. It is a lot to take in. The temptation is to pull out, to sort it into neat levels of importance. But that is a mistake. Look again.
I see.
What you are looking at is the beginning of a spiral of cause and effect.
Horus gestured, and an image of the space around Akazar Beta grew in size before them. Glowing lines and dots picked out where mines and stellar debris clogged the planet's orbits. Two clear channels cut through the drifts. Great star fortresses marked the openings of both channels. Within the enclosure formed by the drifts of mines, more space stations turned above the surface of the planet. Squadrons of system defense ships held position around the stations.
Formidable, is it not? And from a certain point of view, impossible to take without a long siege and the loss of vast resources.
Not to you, my lord.
True. But that is not what you want to say, is it?
Why are you doing this?
The right question, but still not what you wanted to say. Go on, my son. Ask.
How can it be done, Lord?
Horus nodded, pride bright in his eyes, though if it were for his son or himself, was not clear.
Let me show you.
A gesture, and the hololiths reconfigured. The clatter of data transmissions and the rasping voice of intercepted communications boomed out from hidden box speakers. Above them, a sphere of projected light filled the dark. Red lines painted moons, cold blues the planet, and pinpricks of light, the position of ships and defenses.
Their defenses are ready. Thanks to my emissary, they know we are coming. Myrmidax Cadeth commands them, and he is a priest of war in the cult of the machine god. He is experienced, intelligent, and ruthless. He does not make mistakes. In this battle, he stands on the other side of these events, and what is about to happen exists between him and me alone. If destruction is a child, we are its parents.
The ship trembled beneath Argonis's feet. On the projection, he saw a swarm of green ship runes thrust towards an opening in a cloud of red defense markers.
Enemy defense is arming.
A sheet of imagery opened beside the battle projection. Weapon platforms loomed above Argonis and the War Master. Gun barrels the size of Titans pivoted to find their targets. Missile batteries unfolded like seed pods.
Their outer defenses see the bulk of our fleet coming fast at the Sunder Channel.
Enemy defenses are ready to fire.
The image of the defense guns flickered. Weapon barrels glowed red, then yellow, then white. Gas vented from cooling towers. Horus was watching it all, his eyes bright.
And a chain of simple consequence begins.
Enemy defense is firing.
The image of the turrets blanked to white, then vanished. Another took its place. Argonis saw a lattice of light reaching across the dark towards the ships strung out before it. Shields flared and collapsed. Armor ripped from hulls. Gas and fire bled into the black. The fleet fired back. Macro cannon rounds slammed into weapon platforms and tore them to fragments. Turbo lasers sliced through defense ships as they thrust forwards. Spheres of wreckage and fire bubbled across the void.
But the most important reaction begins within the enemy's mind.
On the battle projection, the markers of ships and defenses began to flicker. Data spiraled around the dead and the dying. Markers and runes blinked out.
As the first shots are fired, a spiral of questions begins to form in Myrmidax Kadith's mind.
Horus stepped closer to the hollow, eyes fixed on the battle projection. The display zoomed closer. The markers of ships became projections of their hulls, all wrapped with tactical data. The view closed, sweeping past the fleet and down the channel in the defenses.
Kadith begins with the obvious question. What is really happening?
The view spun, and now they were looking from behind the red lattice of the defenses. The second channel lay to their right, the glitter of the unfolding engagement to their left. Above, one of Akazar Beta's moons rolled through its orbit.
He looks further.
The view dived down the open channel, the images of star forts and defense ships blinking past.
He looks deeper.
The sheet of empty space opened before them. Argonis had the sensation of floating, even though he was standing still.
And he finds an answer.
Secondary fleet entering enemy sensor range.
Luminous shapes came out of the dark. First one, then another, and another, until the War Master's second fleet filled the space. They fired as they came on. The defenses around the second channel began to blink out. Horus nodded to himself.
That answer prompts another question to Kadith.
The projection snapped and zoomed out so that the planet, its defenses, its moons, and the two attacking fleets filled the cone of light.
What is the real threat, he asks.
The explosions ringed the second fleet as it cut towards the planet.
But the simple answer does not satisfy him.
The view swung again, and the fleet closing on the first channel was now all around them, its ships looming large.
What if the attack by the second fleet is not the true threat?
The first of the War Master's fleets was almost in the mouth of the channel now. The guns of the Star Fortress guarding its throat began to speak. The explosions churned the vacuum. Values of damage and loss began to glow orange amongst the green ships.
What if there is more than brute firepower and the roar of guns to take account of?
The view spiraled through the fleet, flitting from ship to ship.
He knows that I am here.
The view found a single ship and locked onto it.
He knows that I will be anticipating him.
The projected image swelled into being before them. It was the vengeful spirit.
So he focuses on the first direction of attack and wonders what I am thinking and doing. But he is running out of time.
Fleets entering Sunward and Edgewood channels.
The shapes of weapon platforms loomed large in the picked views. The fire grew, white and orange, beating against Argonis' eyes.
So a choice becomes a necessity.
Enemy reserve fleet moving from high orbit to Sunward channel.
The view snapped to dozens of ships breaking from their position above the planet, they shot towards the engagement in the mouth of the Sunward Channel.
And now true battle is joined.
Orange and red blurred the projection, faster even than Argonis's eyes or mind could follow. Ships fired and dissolved in hollow smoke as they died. The deck was vibrating beneath his feet, and he could hear the vengeful spirit adding her voice to the roar of battle.
Taking direct fire. Void shields are holding.
Sparks fell from the ceiling above. The images of battle were a blur of movement, and the blink of thousands dying in the gap between heartbeats.
Gadith is good. He has stopped thinking about his choice, stopped thinking about whether it was right. He is committed, and so he focuses only on the reality of the battle. But he has already made two mistakes.
Main fleet entering optimal firing range of enemy Star Fortress.
From the moment he began to ask his first question, he lost the initiative. He and all his forces are reacting to what I do. He knows this failure. Though he does not realize it is not his first error, but his second.
The vast Star Fortress at the inner gate of the defenses began to shed motes of red light.
But he can still undo the damage.
A cloud of sparks spilled towards their fleet, and Argonis realized that each one was an assault craft.
Cadith is a warrior of point and edge as much as calculation.
The cloud of assault craft swarmed over the green-marked ships as they tried to turn.
He knows that even Legion forces can be channeled.
Dozens of separate picked images sprung into being. Warriors in sea-green armor ran down a corridor even as one of the walls exploded inwards. Blank-faced figures of chrome and brass broke through the flames.
They can be battered down.
The face of a warrior rose through the projection. Blood streaked the front of his helm. A tear ran from shattered eyepiece to jaw.
They can be bloodied to the point that the tide of control turns.
The warrior roared his defiance and raised a sword an instant before a beam of energy blasted into ash. The lesser hololiths collapsed. The ship was shuddering around Argonis, and he could feel her take damage. The main projection of the battle was alone now, turning in silence. The two green fleets were bright with damage data. The red of the defenses seemed clamped around the fleets like jaws, chewing them, grinding them to fire and dust.
Cadith is winning. But then his first failure comes to undo his effort.
The sphere of Akazar Beta's moon rolled across the image.
The moment Cadith saw our forces, he began to question what was real and what was a feint. What had I anticipated? What was I doing?
Horus stepped amongst the turning image. Projections of ships and star fortresses scanned across his features.
That is the problem with questions. If you receive an answer, the mind tends to think that there is nothing more.
Argonis followed the War Master's gaze and looked at the projection of the moon, in time to see 100 tiny green markers flash into being.
It focuses on the answer, and it forgets the question.
Weapons free, all squadrons full burn.
Galdron ignited his main engine as he came out of the shadow of the moon. His muscles slammed against the back of his armor as the engines screamed. The strait between Akazar Beta and its moon sparkled with detonations and weapons fire. Clouds of burning gas marked the largest ships. As he watched, an explosion shattered into being close to the planet.
Nova shell detonation.
It was peaceful in a way. Distant. Separate. Targeting warnings filled his ears.
They see us!
All wings, launch torpedoes!
Torpedoes cut past him as the bombers loosed their payloads. His strike fighter shook as it burned to keep pace with them. Behind him, the bombers were peeling away, breaking for the open void, their work done. Locked into the targeting spirit of each torpedo was a specific component of the planet's defenses. Layers of redundancy were built into the targeting and launch pattern. Even if the defenders shot half of them out of the void, the remainder would be enough. More than enough. and Galdron had no intention of letting the defenders do even that much damage. Explosions burst close by, their fire stealing the dark of the void. He saw a glitter as squadrons of enemy fighters launched to meet them. He opened the Vox to Skarix and gave his order.
Nostromen, your time is now.
Yes, the War Master wills.
Skarix's wing dropped and thrust forwards, engines running raw and white. The lead Night Lord's craft were strike fighters, all engine power and weapon payload. Behind them were the gunships, their guts heavy with squads of midnight-clad warriors. Their purpose was not precision or domination. It was anarchy and terror. In the old, murdered age of the Great Crusade, they had a reputation that followed them like a muttered curse. Now, in this new war, their skill had earned them a place at the War Master's side. Galdron cupped the broad Vox pickup an instant before it began to scream. Static and corrosive code flooded into the signal manifold.